fly safety, sir.
This entire mission is a serious misallocation of valuable military resources.
Because I was inverted.
All right, everyone, the red light is on and we're recording. This is Mark back from the episode of the Veteran Semi-Professional. So today's an interview episode where I'm interviewing a veteran about their life and career after the military, all in effort to help you if you're trying to figure out what am I going to do once I put my hands back in my pockets, grow out my hair, and start wearing these things called quote-unquote civilian clothes. This is the show for you, okay? So I bring people on. We talk about their transition from the military. We talk about, you know, what their career map has been after taking off the uniform. All in an effort to help you and your family feel a little more comfortable about, you know, making the transition back out into the wild of the civilian world and give you a sense of how you might carving together, you know, that life you want to create for you and your family after the military. You know, today's guest, we're going to be talking about some financial services. We're talking about starting, running a small business and then, you know, how that kind of bleeds to also into, you know, charity focused efforts, especially involved in the veteran community. So super pumped to bring Brian onto the show. So Brian, if you can take a minute and introduce yourself, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mark. My name is Brian McCarver. I am a small business owner in South Central Pennsylvania. I run with a longtime business partner and friend of mine, a wealth management firm. And we're at a point now where our growth has led us to a point where we're prepared to start doing things for our community in earnest. And the veteran community is one that I'm interested in supporting. And that's how we got connected. So.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Brian, what did you do in the military?
Mark, like you, I was a grunt.
Classic. Yeah.
When I tell people what I did, I'm like, you know, you picture those soldiers with that little backpack on their back and a gun in their hands walking through the woods. That's what I did. But I had the benefit of going through our nation's military academy. I was commissioned out of West Point and I was an infantry officer, spent a little bit of time in Fort Benning, Georgia, and then about three years in northern Italy in an airborne battalion combat team in northern Italy in Vicenza. Then spent another year back at Fort Benning, Georgia, and then I PCS'd into my hometown, which is where I am now. Resettled with my high school sweetheart, had a family, made it bigger, built a business. Here we are.
Just the American dream. That's yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I also always tell people when I say I was an infantry officer, I'm like, whatever you picture is army dude, that's what I was doing. Okay. Yeah. And they're like, oh, okay. Got it. All right. That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, I always like to dig into, you know, what your transition from the army was like, the good, bad, ugly, sideways. I always like to ask, you know, if there are any bright spots that you maybe want to point out, you know, places maybe you thought you succeeded, did well in something, as well as those speed bumps that might be coming in for people coming behind you.
Well, I transitioned in the late 90s and the economic environment was significantly different than it is today. Not good or bad. It just was different. The economy was booming and it just seemed like anything and everything was available for business and job prospects. I did decide to pick this profession largely because it allowed me to pick exactly where I was going to go and exactly where I'd stay. When you work in the financial services industry, you sort of plant roots that are deep and, you know, undisturbed as long as you succeed. So coming back home to my hometown was a priority, and this was a job that naturally I could do in it. I loved the markets. I loved investing. I was sort of an optimizer in a lot of things. I just wanted to find a way to make the most efficient decisions about most things, and finances being one of them. But yeah, my transition was a little bit anxious, anxiety ridden. You know, you never know what's on the other side. I came from a family that had spent, you know, some time in careers in the military. So leaving and coming back into the wild west of the civilian world was a little bit uncertain. I did immediately use my veterans loan benefit. So I immediately was able to buy a house and raise a family in that house and so on. So yeah, I had a good experience, but nevertheless, as I said, a little bit anxiety ridden just because of the transition, small child, moving family and all that stuff. So
you mentioned the dynamics of your industry kind of make it beneficial to get somewhere and plant down some roots and everything. Can you talk a little bit why that is? I'm assuming it's just the connection with the community and building client relationships. Am I on the right track?
That's exactly correct. Yeah. I mean, your responsibility when you come in to work as a financial advisor is to basically build and maintain relationships and then gain their trust and their confidence in you to help them make, you know, financial decisions once people become financially independent or helping them get to financial independence. So it does help to move back to a community where you know people, you have some connections. Although I've met a lot of people who just, where they were in the military or somewhere where they wanted to go, they just plunked down and made it happen. It's a very flexible profession that when you build a client base in, I'm in South Central Pennsylvania. When you build a client base in South Central Pennsylvania, nobody's going to move you to Topeka, Kansas, is my point. So pick where you want to live. If that's your hometown or sunny Florida or wintery Wisconsin, you just pick it and you go do it and you make it happen. So yeah, very flexible.
On a side note, totally separate from this conversation, but my one of my best friends and I are actually, he lives in Pittsburgh and we're going camping up in the Laurel Highlands in Northern PA tomorrow. Okay. I'm super pumped for it. It's one of our favorite places to go.
Good. Yeah. It's going to be a little white.
That's what I've been hearing. Yeah. That's what he said.
Yeah. Bring your Gore-Tex sleeping bag.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We had this great place where we go. There was actually shelters built. And so at least at night, we'll be covered and everything. But yeah, make sure I got the good boots and the four-wheel drive getting up there. Awesome. We're talking now where you're kind of at the apex, if you will, of like you own this business doing, you know, financial services, providing financial services to your clients and everything. But you didn't get there, you know, coming right out of the Army. So what did that first role look like? Did you know someone? Did they hire you? Did you step right into, you know, creating a client base?
Yeah. Again, one of the reasons I picked this area was because of family and connections in this area. I immediately was introduced to, this would have been by an uncle of my wife's, introduced me to a gentleman who had worked in the industry for a long period of time. It turns out I didn't start working with that gentleman immediately. I chose to work for a different company, but in a couple, 3 years, he invited me to come join his team. And that was eventually the team that my business partner and I took over, bought from him, and then we've grown since that. So that was really my foot in the door and my connection to really this grown professional firm of ours. That's why, you know, picking the right destination is very important, and any of those relationships and assistances that can be provided by family, it does help.
Yeah. One of the things I'm kind of curious with in your story of, you know, it sounds like you've got a business partner you've known for a very long time and, you know, you know, made some big decisions with and everything. How did you all meet and start working together?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's an interesting story. I'm grew up in South Central Pennsylvania, sort of a, you know, not quite small town, but modest town. Mm-hmm. And, he grew up in mostly the metropolitan New York City area and was spending time working for the wirehouse firm that I was working with. And we just made a connection. He was basically somebody designed to support our practice. And he came out of the subway on 9/11/2001 and saw a building collapse in front of him. And he was like, all right, I don't want to live in the city anymore. So he made the decision to move on to the client facing side, which was I was on, and I was able to convince my then boss, hey, if this guy really wants to work in the industry, we should give him a strong consideration. So I was about 15 months at our practice, and then my business partner, John, joined us, and we've been working together since that would have been January 2002. So 22 years now. So
it sounded like you all had some type of collegial relationship. You know, you did business together, but not inside the same house, under the same roof, if you will. Mm-hmm. Then came under the same roof, we're working together. And then was it, you know, the opportunity to buy this practice popped up? You looked at each other and said, "Hey, I like you. You like me. I think we might work well together. Let's do this."
Yeah, it was a combination of things. It was timing and just business circumstances, et cetera, that the other gentleman who owned the practice was getting out of the business. And we were the natural two people to buy the business from him based upon what we did and how we did it together, et cetera. But, you know, it was the one thing that I will tell you that really matters in the civilian world. And it's not that it doesn't matter in the military, but relationships are immensely important, immensely, immensely important. People that you trust and have confidence in will do business with you. And people that you trust and have confidence in and ask for help, they will help you. This isn't necessarily not existent in the military, but in the military, you find yourself surrounded by people that the military told you to be surrounded by. I mean, you don't choose your company commander, you don't choose your squad leaders, you don't choose anybody. You just build connections and relationships professionally, and they earn your respect, you earn their respect. But my point is when you get out, you know, I go back to my wife's uncle made a connection to this gentleman whose business I ultimately purchased. And that relationship has been, that introduction was immensely important in my career. My connection to my business partner, John, again, it's just, we work together, immensely, immensely important. So, and you know, people in the military have those connections, whether they're from the military or they're from prior experience before going into the military or college or whatever it may be, it matters. And people will help you if you ask them for help. And it's not just in my business, any business. You know, my favorite line is, not favorite line, but you know, if you're interested in doing something different and you go to ask somebody for assistance, like, hey, I'm considering, you know, A, B, and C, would you help me think through this? Or would you provide some ideas or whatever? People will definitely help you. If somebody came up to me and said, hey, I'm a West Point graduate moving back to the area, I want to do A, B, C in Camp Hill, Pennsylvania. Let's get a cup of coffee. Like, I don't know if I can help you, but I'll sit down and talk with you.
I was just talking about this with a guest I was recording with earlier today about, I think we as veterans in general, especially when you're fresh out of the military, you can be very prone to want to look at the kind of quote unquote rank structure, whether or not it's, you know, we're used to that kind of hard and fast rules of rank in the military, and then think that always has to translate over to the civilian world. And, oh, this person is, you know, kind of quote unquote 2 to 3 levels above me. Mm-hmm. I can't reach out to them. And you absolutely can. And I encourage you all to do that. And I've always found, you know, especially in your first couple of years of post-transition, or even just finding someone saying, you know, I was a veteran, you're going to at least get your foot in the door. And I almost guarantee you they're going to at least give you the time of day. Now, you've got to show up and, you know, provide value and ask good questions and kind of stuff like that. But it's worthwhile to take advantage of. I'm kind of talking to the audience here a bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's absolutely the case. And I was guilty of that because I went to an academy. I was in the middle. It was just sort of like the whole rank structure is, and that was one of the biggest, not so much shocks, but when I came out at 27, I was working with people who were 70. I mean, it's like generationally, you don't work with somebody in the 70 in the military. And if you do, they're like, who knows what? I mean, my point is like your generals were 50 or your full colonels were late 40s. So you just didn't work with people generationally that was that separate. And you have to learn to be obviously respectful, of course, but you have to break down that barrier and ask for help or just ask for assistance or whatever. That is unquestionably, I'd say, a condition that exists is that concept of rank and should I approach my, you know, this person or not? And, you know, some people aren't going to say yes, but that's going to be the minority of people willing to help you is, you know, the majority of them are going to absolutely say, I don't know, but let's chat. Let's figure it out.
Yeah. Something I'm kind of very curious about in your story, and I've had a lot of people on the show to talk about, you know, buying businesses and who've gone that route. And, you know, in your all scenario, you're already inside the business. Okay. So you know how it works, but especially in financial services where it's a very relationship driven business. Okay. Mm-hmm. And people, you know, your clients are entrusting you with their life savings and everything. Mm-hmm. Okay. How did you all handle the changeover in relationships from, you know, the previous owner to, you know, these new guys kind of taking over the business from them?
Yeah. Well, that is the case. It's very relationship driven. It's very dependent upon people knowing who you are. And my longtime assistant, who's retiring on April 1st, she always had a little sign on her computer screen. It said something along the lines of people don't care how much you know until they know that you care. Is something along that line. Yeah. So, and that rings completely true in our industry. But yeah, that was a almost a handoff by handoff by handoff experience between myself and the retiring advisor, et cetera. It's I'm not going to say you can't do it, but that's it's a little bit risky to come in and just buy a business and start from day one and think that all of those relationships that you purchase or that the previous advisor had will necessarily stay. And they might, depending upon the structure and this, you know, how the business operates and the systems and everything that are involved. I mean, we have a 20 some person system, and I can't help it, but this is how I was trained in the infantry, is sort of like you create redundancy and who does what. You, mm-hmm. you don't create any isolated player that can't, you know, be, you know, we're not dealing in a mortality business, but my point is, you know, you just create, I create redundancy and who does what, because if something happens, you want the business to succeed and you want the client to stay with you and you want the client's needs to continue to be met if something were to happen to me or my assistant or whatever. So anyway, that's one lesson I definitely brought to the civilian world, was a backup contingency plan.
Yeah, no, we think sometimes that there's these lessons and takeaways from the military that I think just that we can sometimes be prone to think that they just exist inside the military. Okay. You know, and this idea of redundancies and, you know, in the army, we call it cross training, right? You know, everyone knew how to work a machine gun and everyone knew how to, you know, turn on the radio and everything. Right. And the civilian world, I mean, there's similarities there. Everyone's got to know how to do everything, but you don't want the one person who's the only one who knows how to work the client relationship management system. You don't want one person who's got the keys to the safe, the one person who knows how to turn on the backhoe, whatever it is, right? There's all those examples. And I think we want to think that those don't have value in the civilian world, but they absolutely do.
They absolutely do. Well, I'll say it this way, and this is, you know, just through talking with other people, if you're not contemplating those things, you're not really building business value. You're creating risk that is potentially going to expose itself if something goes wrong. Like if I have all the secrets of the business and I want to depart or leave my business, I got to somehow transfer all my secrets to somebody else. You know, otherwise, there's no value to the business if I have all the secrets and I retire, or if I have all the relationships, or I have all the, you know, secret sauce or whatever. I mean, you got to transfer that to somebody so that the business can continue. And those aren't immediately evident, but those are definitely concepts you learn in the military. I mean, there's no doubt about it. There's absolute crossover in that. In our case, it's chain of command and leadership, and what happens if this guy goes down or that guy's injured or whatever. But it applies to real world civilian stuff. So
you and your partner took over the business, and you've all had it for a number of years now. And it sounds like you all have been able to grow the business you know, from where it was when you got it. Looking back over that, what do you attribute that growth to? And I think, you know, I'm just kind of curious what comes to mind, like how you are, we'll take it from here to there.
Well, I could look back at my time in the military, and I was probably 85 to 90% of my non-commissioned officers were awesome, and the other ones were great. So, I mean, my point was, it's almost bound to be successful in terms of being an officer when you have great NCOs, because you sort of just sit back and watch them work. But that was all by chance. I mean, I was in a pretty well sought after unit. So the point was, is that there were some people who wanted to be there and some competent people who arrived. But we have made absolutely unequivocally exceptional hires. We have great teammates and people who I'd like to say are force multipliers. I mean, they just allow... My job isn't at one point when John and I started in the business and we went into the independent route, I was doing payroll and I was doing bookkeeping and I was doing HR and I was doing I-9s and I was doing stuff that just was not business productive. And he was doing things related to compliance and investment management and portfolio management and just stuff that wasn't client facing. And client facing is really our role. I mean, our clients pay us to serve them, and our clients, you know, our time should be spent facing our clients and giving advice, or for that matter, finding new clients. So to the extent I could hire good quality people that I could immediately trust to go through stuff, to a very high level of quality done. I mean, our business took off. And that's, so I go back to my military days. I didn't get to pick my first platoon sergeant, but he was a rock star. But I mean, I would have hired him anyway, but I got to pick my business manager, and he's exceptional. So I get to pick my portfolio manager, my lead guy on my portfolio management team. So, I mean, all those things in the civilian world, you can sort of manage as long as the right person comes along at the right time. But that's definitely, unquestionably, John and I would not have a business as successful that it is today without the fact that we'd hire really strong teammates, and we have exceptional support staff and admin, and it all has worked together really, really nicely. So
it is amazing how having the just a good team around you just makes all that difference. I mean, I think any time in the military when, you know, Mark quote unquote, you know, got credit for something or whatever, it was, you know, my NCOs also got the credit because they were the ones really, you know, making it happen on the ground. And it's the same thing in any type of business. You know, if you're, you're kind of describing the classic, you know, working in the business versus working on the business. Yeah. If you find yourself, you know, doing all the day-to-day tasks, then you're always going to be stuck in the plateau of where you are versus growing, which is comes from being able to, you know, put good people to take care of that stuff so you can focus on the bigger problems.
And I will tell you, I learned about, you know, longer term planning and thinking in part because of the military. I mean, you're not just waking up tomorrow and running PT and then like, okay, well now what do we do next? I mean, it's kind of like you do all these things because you're leading to a deployment or some activity. So you're thinking steps and steps ahead. And that is definitely translated to, you know, my job here as a leader of this organization and working, you know, day to day in the business, but working on the business and making the business grow strategically by hiring the right people and connecting with the right people. So again, all these nuanced connections that are similar to your time you spend in the military, is it necessarily a big fat Sharpie line that gets drawn from point to point? No, but there's definitely a connection back to what you learned and did in the military. So
Brian, can you maybe share what a typical week might look like for you for someone who's interested? And I know it's going to vary day to day and every week, but you know, generally speaking, what one might look like for you.
Well, at this point, I have a pretty mature book of business, so I have a lot of my time is spent doing client related activities, whether it's, you know, presenting to them, or, you know, we do planning, so we do projections and that type of stuff, or following up, or there's a tax form that's due or something that they're looking for. So that's a decent amount of my time. I do spend probably maybe 20 to 25% of my time doing business owner type things, which could be business development. It could be, you know, director meetings. It could be looking at financial projections, et cetera. And then, you know, the balance of my time is we actually set up a system where our practice is growing fast enough where we have been able to assign, even though I'm a managing director, I'm assigned developing two new financial advisors in the business. So I have a one-on-one, it's almost like a team leader responsibility of like a fire team leader teaching somebody. At least they're more experienced than privates, but I mean, I'm trying to draw a line here, is that you know, it's that one-on-one connection and relationship with these people who are, you know, 3 or 5 years in the business that are trying to grow their practice. So, you know, help them build that book. So that mentorship type relationship. So it's a pretty balanced, but again, I'm not on the back end of my career, but we have a very mature, practice, and, we get a pretty reasonable number of referrals from clients, from professionals. So we have a constant flow of activity in terms of, business introductions and the need to, you know, present and plan and do all that stuff. So.
I appreciate that. I think that sometimes there can be this curtain up that people have of just what does someone really do in this industry and in any given industry on a day-to-day basis. And so I think that, you know, clears it up at least a little bit for people. And I'd appreciate you adding in the bit about, you know, having some junior folks on your staff that, you know, you're working and mentoring with.
Our business is a little bit unique in that you can enter our business and you can start from scratch and you can be your own owner and you can start with just you and your cell phone and your risk of failure is high. Your potential, you know, win or economic gain from it is very high. And the route that I chose was for a little bit of stability in my family and financial life. I got connected to this gentleman who had a pretty mature business. My business partner and I took from that business and we made the business, larger and broader with more people. If you are interested in the industry and you're a little bit concerned about taking the risk on your own, there are practitioners who have teams and you could come on as a team, as I just made reference to, a junior or somebody, and you could actually do work and sort of be an apprentice or a junior advisor or whatever. How do you find those teams? I don't know. I mean, they're available. They're present. You can search in the metropolitan area that you're going to or the small town and just see who's there. Also, our industry has a lot of there's a demographic issue in our industry where there's a lot of senior advisors that you might be able to find an opportunity where it could be, you know, a 2 or 3 or 4 person shop and the senior advisor is ready to leave and needs to transition the book of business to somebody else. So every circumstance is slightly different. So but it gives you that sort of completely entrepreneurial opportunity to build whatever you want to build and reap the gains of it. Or you have a greater, or you could have an option if you found the right connection to have a little bit more stable growth path like my business partner and I chose.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I think for anyone out there who's listening of thinking like how I can kind of get in this route myself. I mean, I always encourage people, you know, if you have a target firm or something that you're looking at, you know, always look up wealth advisor, veteran, this firm. That's always a great place to start, a wealth advisor, Army, Navy, whatever. Mm-hmm. And just again, the vet net is real and powerful and you'll probably at least get a phone call to be able to talk to that person. Yeah. Okay. And for anyone out there, you know, if you're maybe trying to go back to your hometown, and maybe this is an industry you want to get into, also be a great way to use the SkillBridge program to go work at one of these companies, in particular, if they're, you know, a smaller shop somewhere, I'm sure they'd be happy to take on some extra help for a couple of months. And then that could be a good segue for you into maybe getting a full-time role with them. Yes. So some cool pathways to at least connect with people and find out more if that's what you're interested in. Mm-hmm. Well, so Brian, I know when we talked to, so you're in this great place where you've got this good business, you got this, you know, you live in the same town with your high school sweetheart, all these wonderful things. And I know you've also had some charitable efforts kind of focused on the veteran community as well. Can you talk about, you know, what you're doing there?
Sure. The mission of our organization is to essentially help people, people would be our employees and our clients, to become financially independent so that they can, without the need of a paycheck, turn around and face the community that has, you know, helped them or that you've been in for years, and give back to that community. And that can be whatever it may be. It could be dogs and cats. It could be small kids. It could be I choose veterans is really how I look at it. So my interest was largely because my family had served for decades or for generations. My grandfather had served in World War II. My father had served in Vietnam. My brother and I served since the 90s on. His son is serving today. And some of us had been in combat, but none of us had lost our lives. We'd all come back. Some of us were, my father was wounded pretty significantly in Vietnam, but we all came back and we were able to take advantage of the freedoms and liberties of this country. And I grew a very successful business as a result of what's been made available in this country for, I think almost anybody can build a business like we built. But I knew I needed to give back to veterans who didn't make that transition as easily as I did. And I wanted to for years to do this. And finally, a couple of years ago, I'm like, all right, let's do this. We're doing it. And so it was in basically 3 or 4 months, we put together a veteran charity clay shoot where we basically gather from the business connections and the people that we know and the other professional advisors and whatnot, just say, hey, we're interested in supporting some veteran organizations. Come out to this event and shoot some shotguns and drink a beer or have some, you know, lunch with us and whatever. And instead of going on a traditional golf outing, I decided to make it a charity clay shoot outing. So,
you know, I love the clay shoot actually. So at the veterans club in my business school, every year we would do, we also did a clay shoot, and it was strange how many of our classmates many of whom had never even shot a gun before, mm-hmm. wanted to come out to this because they're like, oh, well, I'm with like a bunch of army guys. Like they probably know what they're doing here. I feel a little more comfortable, like, you know, going to a range with Mark versus, you know, my neighbor or something. Yeah. And it just felt like a little more approachable to them. And I think also, you know, clay shooting in particular feels more sporting. It feels more like a hobby than other forms of shooting out there. So again, for someone who's maybe like not a gun enthusiast, it feel more approachable for someone to walk up to and want to participate in. So I like that kind of connection and event creation for the space for everybody involved.
I started, I don't remember when I started shooting in this area, and I'm not a bad shot. I'm not a great shot, but I mean, it's much more enjoyable for me to go and shoot 100 rounds at orange targets than swing a long stick at a white ball. So it's also when you put together a veteran shoot, like a veteran's activity, I mean, a shoot, a lot of people who hunt shoot or will shoot clay pigeons. So that whole community of business owners who like to shoot and hunt, I mean, it all easily you get support from for the veteran community because of that sort of overlay or interconnection between all those different people. They all sort of sit in the same space.
So. Yeah. 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 And where does the money go to? What are the causes direct towards?
Yeah. So when I started it, I had really, I knew I wanted to do something for some charity. And one thing that really was always in the back of my mind is I wanted to help kids that were affected because their parents had passed away during the war, just to make sure they had an opportunity to go to college. And I had been following, I had had a great friend of mine and a classmate of mine who's actually still serving, who had spent a number of years in the special operations community. And I had been following the Special Operations Warrior Foundation, and mm-hmm. they have a great service to those who either in special operations units or served with or deployed with that get injured or pass away in service. So that was one I knew I was going to support that organization right off the bat. But I thought that's a national organization. There's nothing wrong with supporting national organizations. I do every single year. But I needed to make a connection locally. So I wanted to find a local charity, and I wanted to then find a national charity. So in the process of saying I wanted to start this, somebody had suggested to me to look at a new charity being really spun up in the Harrisburg area called Veterans Outreach of Pennsylvania. They are in the process of, they aren't done. They're a couple months away from finishing essentially a tiny home community where homeless veterans can come in and stay in these little really kind of small individual one-bedroom homes. And then there's a service support kind of community center type thing that allows them to get some medical treatment, et cetera. So I said, done. That's perfect. Like, this is exactly the type of person that needs, you know, help, and the type of person I was shooting for, which, you know, they didn't quite make the transition like I was able to make the transition. Somebody who, after serving in the military, for whatever reason, is homeless, you know, let's reach out and help and connect those people. So we've stuck with the same local organization, Veterans Outreach of Pennsylvania. The first year we supported Special Operations Warrior Foundation. Last year we supported Semper Fi and America's Fund as our national organization. Between those 2 years, we raised about $100,000 between the two events. So a little bit over 50 the second year, a little bit under 50 the first year. And this year, it'll be Veterans Outreach of Pennsylvania along with Tunnels to Towers. My wife had suggested Tunnels to Towers, and I'm like, all right, I'll read about this organization. And by the way, when I search for organizations to support, certainly there has to be a veterans aspect to it, but I really search for efficient organizations, mm-hmm. organizations that turn a dollar into 98-97% benefit back to veterans. So I looked at Tunnels to Towers, and a very, very efficient organization. They have a little bit of a broader coverage of who they cover. Very successful national organization that raises millions and millions of dollars for people affected by the tragedy of 9/11 and thereafter. But it turns out Tunnels to Towers bought the land adjacent to Veterans Outreach of Pennsylvania, and they're basically adding a second location.
I love that.
I called the guy from VOPA. I'm like, what's going on here? Like, are you guys like partnering up? He's like, no, you wouldn't believe it. Like, they're buying this and we're working together and so on and so forth. So I was like, all right, done. Perfect. It's a perfect example of how this national successful organization is coming to help our region, but we're still helping them nationally. But the point is they're still going to be two separate locations in the very close proximity to each other, but the same concept is they're going to help veterans who are homeless and need, you know, a step out of poverty. And, anyway, that was this year's connection. I don't know what next year's is going to be, but I promised to do this for 10 years. So I got seven more to find. So
the universe works in mysterious ways sometimes. It really does. That's awesome though. And there's some tremendous, you know, national organizations out there, but and it very much sounds like, you know, you and your family have your roots firmly planted in the community around you. And so being able to find something local that, you know, you all can be involved with, not just from a, check writing perspective, you know, but be close enough to be able to drive there kind of thing, is super powerful, both from a, you know, impact you can make, but then also like impact you feel on the other side as well. So that's really cool.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to this year. I've been down to see the facility that VOPA is developing. I haven't been down since the adjacent lot was purchased by Tunnels and Towers. I don't quite understand their, I don't have the details of their timeline, but it was like, this is easy. Done.
I
don't need to look anymore. That's a very efficient organization, nationally serviced, but they're helping us locally. So
yeah, that's cool. Yeah. Well, Brian, I really appreciate your time this afternoon. I know, you know, running a business is no small feat, so I appreciate you carving out an hour on your Friday afternoon to come and talk to the audience and me and everything. So in a minute, I'm going to pass back over to you, just provide some parting shots, words of wisdom to the crowd and everything. But before I do, this question I always ask my guests at the end of the show. So if you think back to your time in the Army, what was the best and or worst chow hall you ever ate at?
Wow. Chow hall. Well, I ate a lot of awful MREs, but I had probably one of the best actual. Remember, I served in, I didn't say this, but I served in the mid 90s. So I served from 93 to 96. And my unit, which was based in Europe, was tagged to go to Tuzla Airfield. And which wasn't really a combat deployment. It was just a deployment helping the zone of separation between this the Serbians and the Bosnians. And I can remember somebody local, I don't know how, but somebody, they found a bakery locally that made bread. And we would take the bread and we would toast it on kerosene heaters. I'm certain that's not approved by the FDA, but we would toast them and then we would put Italian olive oil on it and we'd eat it just like that. And for some reason, I just, that whole process just sticks in my mind because I'd eaten was basically plastic food for, I don't know, it was 30 or 40 days. And that was just one aspect of eating. The best and worst. My wife seems to think that the chow hall and the cafeteria at West Point is some superior food. I'm not quite sure I agree with that, but I'll go with the home baked bread in Tuzla Airfield in Bosnia.
We had a right outside the gate of my fire base in Syria. We had the local bakery, and they just pumped out flatbread, and they were these big pieces. I mean, they're like, you know, probably like 12, 14 inches across, kind of thing. And so we would regularly, you know, come back in from a mission, stop in there, and then just walk in the front door with just a giant stack of, fresh, still warm flatbread. Yeah. And all the guys who were still in the base were like, oh, you guys are just living the high life right now. You could, you know, turn it into a burrito. We would make pizzas on it. It's tremendous. Anyway, nothing like fresh bread sometimes.
Well, I like the question. Keep it going. Yeah, it just sort of brings back memories. Right. As awful as that was, I found a little glimmer of good stuff.
Exactly. Well, Brian, again, I really appreciate your time. So I just want to give you one last chance to talk to people of, you know, thoughts about putting together, you know, life and working through the transition and going into your post-military life?
Yeah, I'd sum it up as the military is a big organization and a lot of people are transitioning. But I can tell you broadly, there's a lot of veterans who are available to help you. The exception would be somebody who doesn't want to help you. But if you find or identify somebody locally who served and you just need some assistance or you have a desire to ask questions, I mean, just reach out. Like if a veteran sent me an email right now, it's like, I got another call at 4:30 today, but like, hey, let's call you over the weekend. I'll figure it out. I'll help you do something. Big community of people here to help you. And that's not officially DOD sanctioned. That's just people knowing that people need help and they need a little guidance and clarity on the other side of the zone of departure or whatever you call it, the line of departure or whatever it is. So reach out, ask. LinkedIn is an incredible resource. Like social media did not exist when I got out of the military, but you can easily find people that had some connection or affiliation with your unit or college or whatever and reach out and connect. And, you know, they're there to help. I'm certain they are. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I've found nothing but the truth in that sentiment. Even if it's, you know, cross services or something, if I call a former Marine, I'm going to make a joke about him eating crayons. He'll talk to me about, you know, being a weak Army guy. And we'll, you know, get past that in the first 30 seconds and just want to find a way to help each other out. So that camaraderie of arms is absolutely there. Well, Brian, I really appreciate you coming on. This is a great conversation. You're doing good things for, you know, your community at large and then the veteran community as well. So I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your experiences with us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for what you do for the community. And we appreciate being on here today. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, for everyone still listening, please like, subscribe, leave a review, and we'll see you all next week. Take care.